You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, everyone. Welcome to Monday Football Monday. It is January 8th, 2024, and we are presented by DraftKings, DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SBNFL, because life is more fun when you are in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void or prohibited, see DraftKings.com. For details, as noted, it is Monday, January 8th, the Monday after Week 18 in the NFL regular season. And as the SB Nation NFL show, we are very excited to talk about it. Make sure you subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show wherever you get your podcasts, Apple devices, Spotify. You can listen to us there. You can also watch us on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel. When I say us, the incredible, the extraordinary Rachel Prevett on the ones and twos, as always, Mark Schofield is absent on this fine Monday. My name is RJ Ochoa, and with me in the co-pilot chair is JP Acosta. JP, the most talented writer at SBNation.com since Mark was not here. JP, I have something to say that I hope you're proud of, which I know is kind of a heavy way to come into this.
Okay, I'm ready.
So this past Friday, my wife and I, my mom came along too. We took my son to Dave & Buster's. Had a good time, you know, played a bunch of games. He's two, so he just kind of enjoyed all the lights and stuff. So I really did all the hard work. But it came time to cash out. And we had 1,800, I forget what they're called, tickets or credits or whatever. We got him a Mario plush because he's kind of getting into Mario, watching that a little bit. And then we had enough to get a starter Pokemon. We had Charmander, Squirtle, and Bulbasaur at our disposal. No Pikachu there for anyone who is weird like that. But that being said, what would have been the proper choice in your estimation? And I'll tell you what we did, obviously.
So my starter Pokemon was always Charmander. I like the process of Charmander, Charmeleon, and Charizard, because Charizard is one of my favorite Pokemon ever. So Charmander is always my pick.
Yeah, you can miss me with the like, well, technically the best way to start is with Bulbasaur because your first gym is the rock-based gym and all that stupid stuff. We went Charmander. So we're there. We park our cars in the same garage, JP, so I'm happy that we can make you proud. Did you enjoy all of the Week 18 regular season action across the Football League of National?
All but one, really, yeah. I had a lot of fun watching football outside of the 1 p.m. slate.
Yeah, it was a weird weekend in that there wasn't like a super consequential game. I thought the Saturday game, the first one, was, no offense, Rachel, I don't think any will be taken by you, super boring. I don't know why we needed to see the Ravens in that time slot, given that they had nothing to play for. Cool, the Steelers won. And then they obviously went into cross their fingers, cope mode. And they ultimately got what they needed. Sorry. Saturday night was fun, though. Congratulations to the Houston Texans, who clinched a playoff berth and, as fate would ultimately have it, win the AFC South. Something that somebody around here predicted and was laughed at, and we will certainly get there. But Sunday, again, even the Dolphins-Bills game that we saw on Sunday night wasn't, like, epic. It was weird, which is, I guess, kind of the MO of every Bills-Dolphins game in general. But we have a lot to get to. We're going to fly through some of these games. We're going to have some kind of massive general takes. And then, of course, the playoff picture, the firings. It is Black Monday, after all, across the NFL. JP and the rest of our staff at SBNation.com are doing a wonderful job keeping track and tabs on all things. JP, spin the wheel. Where would you like to start?
Let's see.
Should we do games? Should we do the playoff picture as it stands? Like, what, you know, where, how should we do this?
We could kind of do, like, if we broke down, like, we can do the games.
Okay. What game do you want to talk about first, JP? This is your moment.
I mean, are we just going to rip the Band-Aid off?
I mean, I think we kind of have to, because it was the most seismic game in terms of impact. I mentioned what happened on Saturday. The Jacksonville Jaguars lost on Sunday to the Tennessee Titans, which opened the door, obviously, for the Pittsburgh Steelers to crawl in as the seventh seed in the AFC, and for the Houston Texans, who beat the Colts, as mentioned, to win the AFC South. The Jaguars, JP, lost 28-20, and I got to be honest, didn't really even feel that close. You know, that gift at the end that they couldn't cash in on at the very, you know, down near the goal line, felt a little bit fake, you know, but would have been totally fine, obviously, if Jacksonville had been able to pull this off. This was a cataclysmic collapse from the Jaguars, JP. And some people are saying it all started with the waving of the terrible towel.
So there's a point in this game where it's third and goal from the two, and they line up, the Jaguars line up in the T formation and throw a rollout pass to the third string tight end. And it's an incompletion. Then on fourth and goal, they try the Lawrence leap, where he sticks the ball out over the line, but the center gets absolutely obliterated. The guard is pulling for no reason. Nobody knows what play it is, and they end up getting stopped. That feels like a microcosm of the Jaguar season right there. It was embarrassing to go from 8-3 to 9-8, and not only go from 8-3 to 9-8 and miss the playoffs. Every loss was the exact same. The defense didn't know how to tackle. There were self-inflicted wounds, self-inflicted errors on offense, from not being able to block up front to the most inexplicable turnovers to receivers not running the right routes. That is organizational failure. That is the top of this organization. The coaching staff, the GM, the management, they failed in creating this team. Because they looked at last year and they hung tough with the Chiefs in the divisional round and were like, yeah, we'll just run this back. We'll run it back without getting better, without seeing that everybody else in the conference got better. And so when you go 9-8 and decide to run it back outside of switching right tackles, 9-8 is what you get, because you didn't actually get any better. This is the most important offseason in my lifetime as a Jaguars fan. It feels like this is critical, not only for the future of the organization, but where they actually stand. Because now you don't have you can't go into this offseason like last year, where you're like, oh, this is now our division. You just lost the division to a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. The Colts were right there without their starting quarterback and a defense that was playing with a bunch of seventh rounders and UDFAs in the secondary. This is no longer a breeze for you. You have to get better. You have to do something. Something has to change, whether it be a GM, which I think is highly unlikely. Trent Baalke survived Urban Meyer. Shad Khan loves that man. Coaching, I would say the defensive coordinator probably changes. I don't know about offensive coordinator. If you remember, Press Taylor is the reason Doug Peterson got fired in Philadelphia. Head coach, again, I doubt it, but something has to be drastically different about this team. You have to make a seismic change.
So I think I agree with about 95% of what you said. The only thing I would, I guess, just tweak is, so I've said before that my comp for this is always the 2015 Cowboys. They acted like they could just pick right up where Dez caught it. That's how they didn't, I won't even want to say build their team, because they didn't. They just tried to run it back. And you can't, like, 100% of history tells us you have to climb the mountain all over again. And I think that the Jaguars, in a much smaller and fractional sense, are similar to the 2022 Giants, who overachieved in the first year of the program, obviously, and then kind of fell in love with that idea. There was a lot more to fall in love with, like, that was legitimate with the Jaguars, obviously, than the Giants. And as a result, I must even, you know, don't want to say they fell flat on their face. They were 8-3. I mean, like, they were really good. You know, they just had a horrible kind of end of the season. And I think that they probably thought, oh, Calvin Ridley will be enough. Like, we don't have to do anything because we got Calvin Ridley coming back. And he was enough in certain moments, but then he kind of faded in others. And so it just fell apart. And I think if I was a Jaguars fan, what would be the most concerning thing, you kind of touched on it, is this is no longer this like joke of a division, right? You've got D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud in Houston. Shane Steichen is very, very talented, obviously, even if he's not going to win Coach of the Year. And Anthony Richardson coming back will only raise the floor for Indianapolis. Who knows what's going to happen with the team who beat the Jaguars in this game in Tennessee. But this is a tough situation. This was, you have to strike when the iron's hot. You have to get to the playoffs. You have to be there year in and year out. I even think that Chiefs game you mentioned, Mahomes missed, you know, a lot of that game. And maybe that kind of, you know, clouded how you felt about it. Like, hey, we hung with the Chiefs when it really, again, no offense to that loss, obviously, but it really wasn't like the Chiefs, if that makes sense.
I think the most concerning thing for me is you're now entering an offseason where Trevor Lawrence had sustained multiple injuries behind an offensive line that you believed was good enough this year after not being good enough last year. And they got worse. Luke Fortner might be the worst center in football. I am sorry. That man has... He is not good. And just there's been regression along the interior of the offensive line. Walker Little moved from guard to tackle, back to guard, and then just didn't play at all because they traded for Ezra Cleveland. The only bright spot was Anton Harrison, and he was a rookie. Something has to change up front because the major problems for this Jaguars team manifested because they did not believe in their offensive line. That third and fourth and goal sequence that I talked about, they did that because they knew they couldn't run the ball. That was a problem the entire season. They tried to get too creative in the red zone because they knew they couldn't block. Trevor Lawrence sustained ankle injury, shoulder injury, concussion, all behind that offensive line. It's now to the point where, again, I tweeted it after the Ravens game, but I get real icky, like Stafford in Detroit vibes from Trevor in Jacksonville. And yeah, it's going to hurt. A lot.
I asked you this right before you started recording. I saw SB Nation alum Charles McDonald had a tweet after Sunday Night Football that said, who will be Mike McDaniel's Stafford? In other words, like who will he be the Sean McVay to in this situation? And the top response that I saw was Trevor Lawrence. And that just made too much sense. Like I didn't even apply any thought to it at that point because I was like, oh, like I'm not going to come with an answer that's better than this. It does kind of feel like this. It is amazing. Speaking of Sean McVay and the Rams, how much the meaningless win that the Jets had against them in 2020 that like changed the dynamic of all of this. I mean, I do think that Trevor Lawrence and the stands around him, yourself included, are facing a really frustrating offseason because the conversation is going to be all about how he choked and all this. And granted, there was the injury and things like that, but like, it's kind of hard to put him in the like elite of AFC quarterbacks at this moment in time. And now he's eligible for a contract extension. Like, again, it's going to be a frustrating, you know, few months, I think.
So I am still of the belief that Trevor Lawrence is good to very good. I think the fumble problems and the just the ball placement issues, especially when like you can tell he's pressing, are an issue. But I also think that this team is built upon Trevor Lawrence having to make every perfect play for them to actually be in a game. He has to be absolutely perfect because that's what happened last year when they made the playoffs. Trevor played out of his mind against Dallas, against Baltimore, in the first Titans game before the season winning one, in the second half of the Chargers game. That Chargers game kind of felt like, oh, this was the Jaguars, you know? The quarterback plays bad, the team spirals. Quarterback plays good, they're one of the best teams in football. But I am of the belief that he is still very good. I think this offseason is critical both for him and the front office because, again, they cannot go into this thinking we can remain the same up front. You're going to re-sign Calvin Ridley. I don't think that's a question. You're going to end up giving a second-round pick to the Falcons for re-signing Calvin. Well, actually, because they're not extending him mid-season, I don't know if they'll get second. They'll probably get a third, but
that seems like a way too convenient, like, you know, loophole to exploit. Yeah, but maybe it's possible. I mean, we'll see.
I don't think they put in that trade, like those trade details, if they weren't going to extend him or re-sign him. So they might let him enter free agency, but kind of have like a gentleman's agreement that, yeah, we're going to re-sign you. I think they end up franchise tagging Josh Allen. And from there, you got to work on the offensive line and the defensive line. You cannot go into this next season with the same group, because that was ultimately the weakest point, the interior of both lines. And it ultimately got Trevor Lawrence hurt. He was playing hurt since the Bengals game on Monday night, which is really where the season really kind of went down.
Right. Jaguar season is over. The Titans season has been over. We're recording or streaming this at it's not almost 10:30 Eastern on Monday. Mike Vrabel is still the head coach of the Tennessee Titans at this moment in time, although there's obviously been a lot of speculation there. I guess we're going to be kind of hopping all over the place today. An update on coach firings, Black Monday situations. Again, we're tracking everything that you need to know at SBNation.com, so check that out. The only two coaches that have been fired at the moment, JP, that have joined, obviously, the list of, entering Sunday, we had Frank Reich had been fired by the Carolina Panthers. Josh McDaniels had been fired by the Las Vegas Raiders. Brandon Staley had been fired by the Los Angeles Chargers. Am I missing one that had been fired before Sunday? I don't think so. Okay, so we had three openings. Literally, as the clock basically struck midnight on Monday, 12:02 a.m., I think, was the time. The Atlanta Falcons fired Arthur Smith after three straight seasons of going 7-10. And on Monday morning, the Washington Commanders announced the inevitable, the departure, the firing, the dismissal of Ron Rivera. They seemingly waited because Sunday was his 62nd birthday, I believe. So happy belated to Ron Rivera. That one, not really shocking at all. The Arthur Smith thing, I guess we can talk about the Falcons-Saints game. Dude, what an ultimate loser moment for Arthur Smith. Oh my gosh. So the amazing thing to me about this was that I say all the time, it's very, very, very difficult to get the entire internet to agree on something, right? Like it's almost impossible. And this was actually something where the moment I saw it, I thought like, maybe there is someone who is going to be all, hey, this is a little bit unprofessional. Hey, whatever, the running up the score. Like I think if this was maybe anybody else, somebody would have had that take, but everybody wasn't just, you know, in agreement that Arthur Smith was wrong. Everybody was like, what a loser. Like, what a horrible, like, bad look for him, blah, blah, blah. This was a really tough scene for Arthur Smith and his final one with the Falcons, JP.
I think everybody in this comes out looking a little bit like a loser. So for a little bit more context, so Dennis Allen told Jameis Winston to take a knee.
Right.
Dennis Allen, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, the head coach, the one who manages and basically is like the top guy on the team. Jameis Winston said, bump that. We're scoring. This is a team decision. I would feel both of these guys, Arthur Smith and Dennis Allen, should probably be fired. Because you don't recover as a head coach from your team saying, yeah, we're not listening to you. Like, we do not care what you think. Like, Jameis
said, slightly disagree. They didn't, like, violate, like, a huge thing. Like, what they did was in the name of, like, their teammate. You know, like, it was, I mean, but, I mean, but still, probably, like, they probably
openly,
you have a point. You have a point that they very, at least, obviously feel comfortable defying their head coach, like in some ways, censorship.
He said, right. Yeah, this was our decision. Dennis Allen told us not to, but we decided to do it anyway. There's no coming back from that. You got to spend the whole offseason thinking about, like, dang, my players don't listen to me when I tell them something. Like, that's incredibly crappy. That's a really tough scene for everybody. I will say it's incredibly funny that Jameis pulled the trigger on this one. I think that
it is funny.
The most famous moment. I love Jameis Winston. I think it is perfect. But yeah, this is just a really, really bad ending for Arthur Smith. Getting 48 dropped on you by the Saints is really tough.
Dude, I mean, what was the good moment of the Arthur Smith era? Like what was the moment? Like, was there a moment where you were like, I could see it, like it's possible? I mean, like it's been like DOA, and I think it's been unfair and not cool how people have held his, you know, upbringing or whatever, his family against him. Like, you know, I don't know that a lot of people gave him a fair shot to kind of prove he was an NFL head coach, and you can certainly argue that he was in positions to have that job, you know, because of that, whatever. But I mean, again, it felt like a lot of people were against this from the very beginning, but he did himself no favors. I mean, like he dug his own grave on this. Like he was very, very purposefully arrogant and terse and short in just about every single press conference, and acted like the smartest guy in the room and like anybody with any idea was stupid, and completely and totally, you know, took three prospects who we were all very, very excited about in Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson, and destroyed them. They are the I don't know what the car is, but in the meme, the like Ferrari in the like the poor house, you know what I'm saying? Like that's what he did. He was like, get in here, get into the carport, baby. We're gonna trap you forever.
It kind of feels like that meme from The Simpsons where Homer Simpson's like, everyone is stupid except me. But no, man, he constantly was like trying to outsmart everybody by using Jonnu Smith to throw passes to Mecole Pruitt. Like, what are you doing? You don't have to try and be the smartest guy in the world. I think ultimately the biggest thing for Arthur Smith was the multiple missteps at the quarterback position. Not only of course there was some contract stuff and the Ravens ultimately were not going to let him go. But the Falcons openly saying, yeah, we're not going to go after Lamar Jackson. We're good with Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke. Like, that's a really, really tough thing to do. You could have just kept that behind closed doors. The trust in Ridder and Mariota before him, you just the constant missteps. Ultimately, thinking that you can play these guys and kind of get marginal play out of them despite surrounding them with really good talent, that's ultimately what did Arthur Smith in. I think he hasn't been good enough offensively. And for a guy who was supposed to be an offensive guru, he was not good enough.
Arthur Smith out in Atlanta. We'll see what happens, obviously, with Dennis Allen in New Orleans. It would be a huge mistake, I think you agree, obviously, for New Orleans to say, hey, we won this game, let's keep Dennis Allen. Like, well, relax. Let's maybe not do that. Additionally, we mentioned Ron Rivera was dismissed as the head coach of the Washington Commanders. By all measures, Ron Rivera is a stand-up human being, but a horrible football coach. I think that there have been, I might be getting this wrong, but I think there have been 5 teams to win a division with a below 500 record. Ron Rivera was the head coach for 2 of them. Once in Carolina, obviously the lone season he won the NFC East in Washington. The Commanders kept things a little bit close, closer than I would have liked, JP, on Sunday against Dallas on his birthday, as mentioned, but ultimately lost 38-10. He is out. We'll see who the new head coach is. Bombshell, to use the verbiage that the National insiders were using with Washington on Monday morning, is that Bob Myers is joining the Commanders, who obviously has made his success for the most part with the Golden State Warriors. So Josh Harris now trying to do the flashy thing with Washington, throw his money around. We'll see if this works. I mean, I don't have like a passionate take on this. I don't know if you do.
This feels like a Harbaugh spot. This feels like one of the places. This feels like one of the franchises.
Talking about Jim, to be clear.
Jim Harbaugh. Not John Harbaugh. Not John Harbaugh.
Yeah, Rachelle almost panicked. Just
No. The family. Jack Harbaugh would not have to drive very far. Jim, I think this makes sense for Jim coming back. I mean, you're going to get a top 2 pick. You're going to get a quarterback coming in. But this feels
you have an owner with a faucet of a bank account.
Like, yeah, I mean, they're going to be willing to spend money because they want to try and make that. This feels like the Broncos last year with the new ownership group and coming in and trying to make a big swing, and then they hire
He's their Russ.
Yeah,
because you need a face. You need a face and a spokesman for the new era, and that's what Russ was for Denver. It certainly wasn't Hackett, obviously.
I mean. No, that. I'm talking about the new group that came in.
Right. But that's like, Walmart. I know that they can't. I know they landed after Russell Wilson, but like in general, they need, you know, this Washington era, because it's the second year of Josh Harris's ownership and the first where he really has like his hands over everything. Yeah. They need a front man for this. And even if it is like Drake May, like it can't be Drake May. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like when you're revamping like this, they might even change the name again. Like you need somebody with a lot of cachet. And Jim Harbaugh certainly checks that.
Yeah. This feels like a spot where they're going to actively go after Jim Harbaugh. I think getting this search firm in place with Rick Spielman and Bob Myers, this feels like a, hey, we're actually being serious. We're putting up our act a little bit. You know, we started going to the gym a little bit. Hey, look at us. I don't know if Jim takes the job, but I feel like this wouldn't be a bad spot for him. I mean, Washington has skill position talent. That's still a thing that they have. The quarterback, you need to figure out, and the defense needs a lot of reupholstering, but I wouldn't mind it. I do feel like this is a Harbaugh or bust kind of situation.
The Monday morning featured a report from Jordan Schultz of Bleacher Report that the Las Vegas Raiders are expected to have interest in Jim Harbaugh. Before we get to the Raiders, do we agree that this feels like the return of Jim to the NFL. Like, I know it's happened like every year, but like this really feels like it. And especially if Michigan walks off on Monday night with the national title.
This feels like, it feels like tonight might be the last night Jim Harbaugh coaches in college football. I think last year with the whole, he interviewed with the Vikings before they hired, or not last year, even say,
it was 2 years ago when KOC got that job. I wouldn't even say he interviewed as much as he was like, you're giving me this job, right? Like,
I want to go to the Vikings, and they're like, never mind. But it feels like he has constantly like been angling to get back in the NFL, and it feels like this year is the good jumping off point.
Okay, so I guess quickly on the Raiders, do we have to talk about them beating the Broncos 27-14? I guess Antonio Pierce is
Hopefully.
I mean, if they don't hire him, I do think that like football culture is going to outrage against
them. First of all, I don't know if the Raiders have enough money to make a big name hire. Second, I think Mark Davis still has in mind the fact that the last time they fired a head coach midseason and the interim got the players behind them and they almost made the playoffs, he went and hired Josh McDaniels. You can't make that same mistake again. You can't do it. Antonio Pierce has gotten, I'm not going to say like he's gotten the Raiders to play really good, but he's gotten them to play with more energy and passion than any Josh McDaniels outfit I've seen in Vegas. Like, he's able to work with and connect with those guys on a better level than any outstanding head coach or any head coach in waiting that they'll probably hire. I think this is a great, great starting point for Antonio Pierce and his head coaching kind of career.
You use the word icky, talking about the Stafford-Lawrence vibes. It would feel kind of icky. And look, Antonio Pierce has his own, you know, skeletons or whatever with what happened at Arizona State. But it would feel kind of icky for this. Like, the Antonio Pierce story kind of feels good. Kind of feels like a Raiders one, right? Like, you know, hire the former player, the dude, you know, that everyone's kind of rallying around. It would feel icky to be like, oh, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to bring in Jim Harbaugh. Like, you know, so we're all rooting for Antonio Pierce at this point to get the job.
It would also be really hard to get other assistants, you know, to work right. for a guy who, hey, if things go wrong and you end up getting the interim spot, say you work with this team really well, they're going to dump you out and hire the next hotshot offensive coordinator. So I think this is the perfect Antonio Pierce and the Raiders absolutely fit. They should not make a change. If they keep Antonio Pierce, I would keep an eye on this team for Justin Fields.
I know that everybody's obviously quick to connect him to Atlanta and whatnot, but I would love that. That would be a lot of fun, especially with Davante Adams, if he stays, obviously. Oh, man, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Let's try to fly through the meaningless game so we can just kind of, you know, get done with it. Like, ooh, we're at the point of the meal where like, okay, we'll just eat the green beans and the asparagus, and then we'll save like the steak and potatoes for like,
you know, yes, later.
The Browns lost the Battle of Ohio 31-14. Congrats to the Bengals. This is the first division in like a million years to finish with every team above 500. Pretty cool, but also pretty sad. So
it makes you really think what could have been if Joe Burrow was like fully healthy. Like,
if I had told you, but like if I had told you that every team would be above 500 and that only the Bengals would miss the playoffs, like we would have never believed that. Like, it would have been impossible. Yeah.
No shot.
But yeah, this was a game that happened. That's really all I have to say about it. So can't wait to see the Browns in the playoffs. The Jets, JP, won 17-3. Did you see the Breece Hall thing at the end of this game?
No, I did not pay attention.
I hope you didn't, because I would love to break this to you. I honestly didn't see this because I was getting ready for the Cowboys game, but I saw this on Good Morning Football today. So this was, you know, week 18, so a lot of like incentives and things like that, and like records and stuff that teams were chasing, especially, you know, once games were decided or if they were meaningless, like in this case. Breece Hall, the Jets were trying to get him 1,000 yards on the season, and they thought that they got it. And granted, this was like with 11 seconds left in the game. Technically speaking, they could have called a timeout and tried one more time. Robert Saleh was asked about this after the game in his post-game press conference, and he mentioned that he used the word mathematician. He said their mathematician miscalculated and that Breece Hall actually finished 6 yards shy of 1,000.
I'd be so mad. I would be so mad. And I would not show up to work next day.
I mean, like, how is that possible? There's no math involved. Just like literally any app in the world will do this for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, how is this fumble possible?
This feels like, so I'm not sure if you remember seeing it, but the University of Arizona, this past year, a couple months ago, they reported that due to a slight clerical error,
right,
they ended up $240 million in the hole and might have to cut other sports en route to the Big 12. This feels like that. Somebody made a clerical error, and now Breece Hall finished 6 yards short of 1,000. I would not show up to work tomorrow. I can't do it, man. Yeah, can't do this to me.
I was like, it's such a weird number to be off by two. You know what I mean? Like, if you were off by like you finished 10 yards shy or something like that, like, okay, like you carried the zero wrong or, you know, whatever. But like six, like, how'd you do that? Like, just really, really strange. On the other side of this, the New England Patriots, the season is finally over, thankfully. Mark Schofield not here to properly lament. Zeke Elliott said that playing in the snow sucked.
It is.
I saw, by the way, you like kicked the hornet's nest that is like weather Twitter recently. Like, you, I think it was on Saturday, right, during the Ravens Steelers game, you were like, oh, this is bad because it was raining, but you're like, snow would be worse, and everybody was just like dunking on you. They were like, no, this is so much worse than snow. JP,
I didn't even say snow was worse. I just said I personally would not want to play in snow or cold weather. Everybody's like, oh, this is football weather. No, it's not. Nothing about this says football weather. That's just people trying to be like fake tough.
It looked worse than the Ravens game, to be honest. Like, I think I would have rather played in the Ravens game, but I would have rather sat in the crowd at the Steelers game. I mean, sorry, the Patriots game, if that makes sense. Because you can like layer up and protect yourself from, you know. I actually have been to a Patriots game in New England where it was raining and it was horrible because like it's just never ended. So.
But it's just the never-ending rain. It would suck to sit in, especially because it's cold and windy. But playing in, I would hate playing in the snow. Just not fun at all.
Who will Bill Belichick be the head coach of, by the way, in 2024? All, by the way, Gina Kelly, the incredible Gina Kelly, said, let's just be grateful that cold weather is bad. I agree. Or let's agree that cold weather is bad. Yeah, I mean,
all,
I'm cool
all
with like,
summers, we.
I'm cool with like 45 degrees if it's not super windy. You know what I mean? Like, if I can have a jacket, like, that's nice. You know what I mean? Like, I'm all for like a nice brisk evening. That's colder than brisk, but you know what I'm saying? I'm cool with that. But like, the moment we start injecting other variables and elements, like, I'm out.
So. Any weather where I have to put on a jacket is cold. I don't like playing in the cold.
Where will Bill Belichick be the head coach next season, JP?
I'm starting to kind of believe that he'll be back in New England. And it'll be back in New England, but with a
that would be so boring.
With a diminished role. Not say like it'd be without the GM tag attached. Like they would find an outside guy to come.
That would be so boring.
Somebody to bring in some new ideas. Because obviously, like Bill Belichick is still a very good developer of talent on the defensive side of the ball. But he just needs more. He needs different ideas. The kind of the brain meld of the Patriot way kind of got to him in the GM aspect. Mm. Where now you just need some new ideas. You need to sprinkle in like a little bit of a, hey, maybe let's go see what the Ravens are doing, or let's go see what the Chiefs are doing. You know, go grab some of those guys and just insert some new blood, some new life into the Patriot way. You know, it's not going to look like it did in 2010, but maybe like a remix version would be cool.
I think that we are very confident that the Jets are going to look the exact same, which is why they're so funny. I don't know if you've seen this floating around, but while we've been streaming / recording, Aaron Rodgers took to the podium for who knows what reason and was asked what has to be different for the Jets. Because he said he wants to come back for not just next year, but for beyond that. He wants to play multiple seasons for the Jets, JP. So buckle up. But asked, and these are my words, I'm paraphrasing, what Aaron or the Jets have to do differently. He said they have to flush the BS. The quote I'm looking at here on Twitter is, the BS that has nothing to do with winning needs to get out of the building. These are words that were said by Aaron Rodgers, JP.
You know that meme from I Think You Should Leave in where he's in the hot dog costume? And he's like, we're all trying to find the guy who did this. You did it. You're the one who brought on the BS for someone who
played. I got to be honest.
Season.
That meme's always gone over my head. That's one of the, like, that's a pop culture hole for me. I don't understand that meme and that reference. Maybe afterwards you can educate me. But I agree with you, like, on Aaron Rodgers. Like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, what? Like, okay, Aaron, see you later. Like, see you on Wednesday when you go to your McAfee hit. You know what I mean? Like, what? Like,
this yeah, is... like, we, the season was perfectly fine without distractions until you went throw Rogan on Pat McAfee show. Like, you don't have to. He, oh my gosh. He is the biggest just attention. Like, he wants attention. He craves it. But, like, dude, to say to get the BS out the room that doesn't have to do with football, nothing happened this year. Like, there was none of that. You were the main source of those problems. So are you just saying you should just be back on the field? Cool. That you can just say that because we all saw that. Like, yeah, the biggest thing that needs to change is you need to actually play.
The Kansas City Chiefs beat the Chargers 13-12 in a game where Patrick Mahomes and everybody sat. Do you have a passion to take on this game?
Chargers fans, get real familiar with LSU receiver Malik Nabers and Georgia tight end Brock Bowers.
Okay. That's all we got because this game stunk. I mean, this was nobody enjoyed this. The Seattle Seahawks, JP, outlasted the Arizona Cardinals 21-20 and then took some heat for smoking cigars. As I understand, was it Julian Love who – okay, so Julian Love shared that he recently had a child, and so he wanted to kind of savor the moment with his teammates and smoke some cigars. Cigars are obviously generally something you smoke, I guess, in the locker room after you clinch a playoff berth or win the division or win the Super Bowl or whatever the case may be. So a lot of people were dragging the Seahawks for doing this, for barely beating the Arizona Cardinals. Although Julian Love's, you know, his story checks out to me. You know, I smoke cigars. Even if there was no kid born, like, it's the end of a season. Just chill, man. Like, you know, you're hanging out with your buddies. I'm fine with this. Like, I get upset and make fun of a lot of things, but like this one, I'll pass on.
We care far too much about how people celebrate in the NFL. And let them have fun. They won a game. They all finished the season relatively healthy. Let them smoke the victory cigars. I think Alabama, of course, college NFL is very different. Alabama smokes victory cigars after every win, including wins over like Middle Tennessee. let them have fun. Let them celebrate.
Establish the fun, if you will.
Exactly. We are establishing the fun. Mm. Let them celebrate 60 minutes of hard work. You go to work, people go to work, you know, you come home and you just want to celebrate, being like, dang, I got through.
Yeah, some people, they, you know, what's the, like, you know, the cliche, you get home, you crack open a cold beer. This is that. That's all they're doing. They're just having, it's just a hard day of work.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm glad we're simpatico on this, JP. Good for us. I don't think we have to address Saturday's games because we kind of already touched on them. The Buccaneers won, if you want to call it that, 9-0 in Carolina.
A win is a win.
They are NFC South champions. Good for Baker Mayfield. Like, that is really cool. Like, dude was thrown away by a lot of people, a lot of teams. And again, I know that the Bucs aren't exactly intimidating or terrifying, but like, good for, this is a real division title, real, you know, playoff appearance for Baker. They completely and totally earned it. So good for him.
And I also want to say good for Todd Bowles. I mean, this team was 4-7 at a certain point in the season. They look dead in the water. They're able to get to the playoffs. And I mean, based on the way that their opponent has looked over the last 6 or 7 weeks, it's not out the wood. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility that they might pull an upset. But I'm not saying they will, but look, you're in now. You're in the dance. And you have a quarterback who constantly has too much dip on his chip. That is going to lead to a lot of problems, both for you and for the other team. Let's make it happen. They have a chance to be pretty fun.
We'll get to the playoff matchups shortly. I guess to quickly kind of wrap up week 18, the Lions beat the Vikings 30-20. The biggest kind of thing from this game was the Sam Laporta injury, and it remains unclear exactly how long he could be out, obviously. Dan Campbell, I saw, was taking some heat for having starters play, you know, as deeply as he had them in. Now, granted, Detroit technically had something to play for, had Dallas and Philadelphia both lost. But this did feel a little bit like Dan Campbell being Dan Campbell. And, you know, there's pros and cons to that. And you could argue this was somewhat in the con category.
I'm here for it being the pro because you still had the chance to get the two seed. You always want to get that opportunity to be the two seed and kind of make your path to the Super Bowl a little easier.
Sure. I mean,
football is a real physical sport. People are going to get hurt. There's going to be freak accidents that happen. I'm fine with the starters playing that deep because you still had something to play for. I mean, the Eagles played their starters like through the first half and looked looked pretty bad. So I think I would be a little more concerned about the Lions pass defense looking not too great, especially with Stafford and Kupp and Nacua and Sean McVay coming to town. That concerns me a little bit.
We'll get there. The Green Bay Packers are headed to the playoffs with Jordan Love, 17-9, the final score. Look, I really want the Bears to be good. I have such a soft spot in my heart for them. My dog's name is Bear. I just like the vibe of Chicago. Like, again, I really am trying to manifest this, but dude, stop embarrassing yourselves. Like, this was, they talk some trash and they just got like, they're like, I don't know that it's Aaron Rodgers or Jordan Love that owns them, but the Packers, like, the if everybody owns the Packers, they all also own the Bears. Like, this is so embarrassing.
I don't remember who said the last time the Bears beat the Packers was also the double doink year, which feels like lifetimes ago. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say that while I did have the Packers winning the division, which they clearly didn't, I did think this team was going to be a playoff team. And I was a lot higher on Jordan Love. It looked rough early, but we held on. We had diamond hands. Dude's good. He's good.
He's really good. They've done it again. I mean, which is frustrating, obviously, for the Bears and everybody else. It would be like so kind of funny if the Lions have this one like NFC North year and then the Packers just like return to complete and total peak form next year and it's all over.
But. And I think the coolest thing is you can see the young receivers growing with Jordan Love. You can see them developing. Dontavian Wicks had a great game. Bo Melton was playing really well. Jaden Reed was awesome this entire year. They're going to be a team like right now they're playing with house money at this point. Like,
let's relax. Let's slow down on that, JP.
This was not a team that was supposed to be here, but now that they are, it could be pretty fun. I'm glad to see Jordan Love getting a chance to show off the arm. He made some throws yesterday that were just absurd, where he's just like, he has such confidence in his arm and the accuracy downfield. It looks so cool. Like, again, it's evident that he watched Aaron Rodgers for the last 4 years because it looks kind of similar. Like the play fakes and the throwing off the back foot looks kind of similar.
Have you seen the movie Troy? It's like 20 years old at this point, but have you seen it with Brad Pitt? Yeah. So it's about the Trojan horse. I don't know if you're familiar with the story in Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. And Brad Pitt plays Achilles, the like mighty warrior. And I don't know if you care about me spoiling a 20-year-old movie for you or if you do, Rachel, So Achilles is this like indestructible warrior. Like he just kills everybody. And again, Brad Pitt plays him and he has a cousin who's like in the army and they're trying to, you know, take over the city of Troy. And one morning they're like, you know, there's a battle that's going to happen. And Achilles's cousin throws on his own armor and goes out and like leads the charge. And he's just like kicking ass and he's like fighting and doing everything. And all the soldiers are like, yeah, let's go. Cause they think it's him. And then he dies and everybody's like, holy crap, Achilles died. And they take off his helmet and they realize, oh man, this is Achilles' cousin. This really sucks. Like who's going to go tell Achilles? And so they go tell him and he's obviously pissed off because he's like, whoa, why'd you let this happen or whatever? And the dude, you know, who's like telling him, he's like punching him in the face. And the guy says, you know, he wore your armor. He even moved like you. And that's exactly what I think about when I think about Jordan Love and like Aaron Rodgers. Like he was in the armor. He moves exactly like him. It's really scary and really frustrating.
Yeah, it's they did it again. You know, the Packers did it again.
The Los Angeles Rams won a game with Carson Wentz at quarterback against San Francisco of all teams.
Sean McVay, how does he do it?
He's had a real big glow up, man. Like I do think that a lot of people checked out on him last year. And I think he did that to himself in a lot of ways, obviously, with his like, you know, flirting with broadcasting and flirting with, that's what I'm saying. Like he took himself out of like legitimacy in some conversations with how much he was like thinking about leaving. And like, look, his personal choices are his personal choices. But I do think that's why everybody kind of started to back off of Sean McVay in terms of love and adoration. But man, he can coach football. Like he is so freaking good.
I think the development now for Sean McVay should be, oh, he's one of the best play callers in the NFL too. Like you said, he's one of the best coaches in the NFL,
right?
Full stop. I think last year there were a lot of rumors like, oh, he could retire and like go to
Fox to commentate on games. He's going to have a child. I don't know how long he's going to be around coaching, but no, this is one of the most impressive coaching. This is one of the most impressive coaching jobs of the year, you know, getting that defense to play at a passable level with seventh round rookies and Aaron Donald in it. And also getting just fantastic play from a fifth round receiver, Puka Nacua, who broke records this year. He is the single season record holder for rookie receiving yards and receiving touchdowns. Like, that's super impressive from a coach who we thought was not going to be coaching this time next year. So it's really impressive what Sean McVay has done, and just the development of the Rams offense from, we kind of associate them with the wide zone, outside zone, boot action, like the stuff that made Jared Goff, Jared Goff, to now they've just completely morphed into a duo, gap running. We're going to get a lot of yards after the catch, and we're going to let our awesome quarterback make no-look passes over the middle of the field. It's super cool how all of that kind of developed over the last 5-6 years.
We have one more game, and then we can kind of – we have some coaching things to hit and discuss the playoff matchups. But the – because we talked about Dolphins, Bill, a little bit. I mean, I guess we talked about this. The Giants destroyed the Eagles 27-10. And that score feels pretty generous, honestly. This was – look, I enjoyed every second of this. The Eagle, I don't even know the Eagles are down bad. Like that's not a proper way to explain what is happening to them at this. They were 10-1. Like, they were 10 and like, I, and I think a lot of people, yourself included, thought they were fraudulent. Like, if you want to, that's a heavy word, but to use, but like, this is more than that. Like, this was like, y'all were some capital F frauds.
I would be concerned. The alarm bells are going off. This is really bad, because I tweeted it, but going from Sean Desai to Matt Patricia has to be one of the worst in-season coaching changes in NFL history. Like, the ones that don't have to do with changing head coaches, you know, like, what was the point? Like, what were you trying to get new play calling, new design? Because everything looks the same. Everything looks worse. You managed to do like the SpongeBob meme where he throws the fire extinguisher at the burning grill and ends up blowing up the Krusty Krab. That's what you're doing. That's what Matt Patricia's doing. You took a problem defensively and made it into a glaring major hole that could ultimately sink this season. And then we haven't even talked about the A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts injury. Like, this is really – this is a horrendous way to end the season.
This is also like the kind of end that like ripples beyond just this, like that's difficult, you know, to kind of flush or whatever. Like, I think it's always funny when this happens, unless it's to your team, but there was the report, the most recent report that they had a players only meeting. The loss after a players only meeting is like one of the toughest scenes of all time. Like, you know, like, oh, we're going to rally together. And then you don't just lose, but you get like blown out, and you get blown out by like a really bad team. It's kind of easy to see significant changes happening for the Eagles in the offseason, and they might be one Monday night playoff game away from those beginning. So we'll get to the playoff matchups in a moment. By the way, I just saw this quote from Garrett Wilson, who said, "I hear I had a good year with a question mark. It was the worst year of my life."
Please help this man. He's like 24 years old, and it's all crazy. Down in the dumps. Did we talk Dolphins Bills?
What?
Did we talk Dolphins Bills?
I mean, we kind of did. I mean, you know, we said it was weird. I mean, I figured we would kind of unpack that as we get to the – because we have the playoffs to get to.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, quickly on coaching news. The Commanders have put in like a billion interviews. They've like, scattered like requests. So they've requested an interview with Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson and Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn for their head coaching job. They have put in a request, JP, for their open GM position with Bears assistant general manager Ian Cunningham. So they, you know, they're busy right now. And I'm trying to catch up. There was another one that I saw a second ago. Go ahead and your thoughts while I look. So I'm sorry. Raheem Morris is who the other request they put in.
So I kind of wonder if Ben Johnson actually like wants to be a head coach. I've said this before, but maybe like he's just cool with like drawing up plays and being just an offensive coordinator, which is fine. Like, that's a really great way to make a living. Jim Schwartz really just wants
Dan to Quinn.
Dan Quinn, Vic Fangio, all seem to be very happy just doing their one thing. And it's perfectly fine to just want to do their one thing. Aaron Glenn is interesting because I think Lions fans have been kind of up and down with Aaron Glenn as a defensive coordinator. Sometimes it's looked good, sometimes, like, man, you playing a lot of man defense for a team that doesn't have man corners. It's interesting, the Aaron Glenn thing. I actually really think Raheem Morris should get another coaching job. I think he kind of he pulled blood from a stone with the Rams defense this year. I would actually really like to see him in Atlanta. Washington would also work really well, but I think him in Atlanta, he has a lot of connections. I think it'd be pretty cool. Ian Cunningham is the GM is interesting because, you know, the Bears have kind of scrapped everything for parts and kind of built through the draft. So I wonder, like, what it'll look like from there. But I also wonder who gets hired first. Is it going to be a combination thing, or do we hire the GM first and let the GM have say on who gets the head coach?
I mean, I think you have to go GM first and let him run the head coaching hire. Like, that's how proper organizations handle this. And so, I mean, but you can have requests in, but like, who's conducting these interviews? Like Josh Harris and Bob Myers, like, that it? You know what I mean? Like, Bob Myers isn't your GM. You know what I mean? So like, I understand you want to have him like be a consultant or whatever, but like, your GM has to be involved in that. Like, it has to be a partnership. Wow. Okay. Are we ready for playoff matchups? Finally, unless anything
let's
else.
Do it.
So let's go chronologically. Does that work? I think that makes sense. So the Cleveland Browns, as the top-seeded wild card in the AFC, will visit the Houston Texans, who, again, sorry, JP, managed to win the AFC South, which, again, I haven't heard one bit of congratulations to me for predicting that way back in August. But, you know, you're a little bit bitter and salty this morning, so I'll let it pass. That being said, the Texans are home underdogs, which I don't think should be a surprise to anyone, given, you know, the way Cleveland has looked, obviously, as of late. I'm pulling up the exact line at the moment. According to our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook, buying myself some time, the Texans are 2.5-point home underdogs, JP.
So I kind of get it. But at the same time, you know, C.J. Stroud and this Texans offense has shown that they can beat anybody. You know, like, they can beat anybody anytime. They have the offense to make things very interesting. The one thing I'm curious about is how the Texans defend the Browns using play action. Joe Flacco has completely morphed himself into just a rocket launcher off of play action. I think his average depth of target is like 13 yards, which is highest in the NFL this year. they want to attack you vertically. And again, the last time the Browns played the Texans, Amari Cooper had 3 billion receiving yards. So defending that guy will probably be a problem for them. I just wonder if Houston has enough stops in them to get the win. Do they have enough defensively to get this? Because the Colts, like, again, they were kind of a good throw for Gardner Minshew away from potentially taking the lead in that game.
Right.
So I wonder how much they have defensively.
I kind of want to say, I mean, although the entire last 6 weeks have like completely disproved this, but like the Joe Flacco thing has to end, right? Like it's not going to like run all the way through. I mean, I recognize that it might. I recognize who we're talking about here, but like, you know, this doesn't this kind of feel like that? Just a little bit. Like you could totally see like Houston, you know, and I mean, I'm going to pick Cleveland, but this is the pick that I'm the most upset about making because I would love to pick Houston, but I can't do it, you know, in full consciousness.
If anyone is capable of making a 2012 Joe Flacco run, why not 2023 Joe Flacco?
Okay. So, but this is the best thing. Like, I know what you said about the Colts, and again, sorry about the Jaguars, but like getting CJ Stroud in the playoffs is a win for football fans everywhere. So, it will at the very least be very exciting to watch him and watch him against this defense. Although, you know, not in a primetime window slot. I recognize it's an island game, but like, of course, they're going to stick the Texans on Saturday afternoon. What about you?
Yeah. I am curious to see how Stroud looks against man coverage. The Browns play a lot of man coverage. They have the talent to play a lot of man coverage. CJ Stroud and the Texans have seen a lot of zone this year because they're in such heavier personnel. You play with a lot more linebackers on the field. They have a lot of soft zones. I wonder what the game plan looks like for man coverage against this Browns team because they are really good at playing man coverage and they have the speed to keep up. And, you know, they have Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett against Laremy Tunsil is going to be one of the best matchups of Wild Card Weekend.
Do you have Peacock?
Yes.
Okay, congratulations. This is going to be a hot topic. This would be a great, not the store hot topic, but this would be a great article, not telling y'all how to do y'all's job, for SBNation.com. Like, for, you know, the people who don't know, we're not going to stereotype anybody, but the people who don't know are the people who need information on how to get Peacock. You can point them in the right direction. The Saturday night game will be streamed exclusively on Peacock, which we were told 5 million times on Sunday. It will be the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the AFC East losing Miami Dolphins, who are entering this whole thing with a whimper. I saw, I think it was Warren Sharp had the take, and I thought this was really funny. This is like master manipulation from Roger Goodell because all of the Taylor Swift fans will sign up for Peacock. Like that's a big win for NBC in that sense. The Chiefs are 3.5-point home favorites, JP. So barely a half point, you know, on top of the home field advantage in a game that we talked about cold weather, supposed to be like negative 10 degrees in terms of the feels like temperature.
First of all, that's not football weather. Nobody should say that's football weather or I will send you the meme of Stone Cold Steve Austin hitting Vince McMahon with guitar.
You love that meme a lot. You use that a lot.
It is a brutal way to end the season for the Dolphins, especially because they shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place. If you take care of business against the Titans with 3 minutes left, up 14, you win the division. That game on Sunday does not matter. But now you have to go to Kansas City in negative degree weather. Against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, who have already seen you once, but now get an extra week to prepare for you.
Andy Reid after the bye. That's been said a million times too, right?
Like, yes. After a bye or with another week to prepare.
It's effectively a bye, right?
The Dolphins will not have Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, or possibly Andrew Van Ginkle, or their fourth edge rusher who got hurt on punt last night when Deontay Hardy took the touchdown back. They might not have Javon Holland, who was playing on a snap count. Xavier Howard's not going to play. You might not have Waddle or Mostert. Like this is a really, really bad way to enter a game against Kansas City.
The moment that Melvin Ingram dropped back in coverage was so funny. Oh, I mean, it was just.
I was like, no. It's like when you watch the horror movie and you see the person go into the woods. Like, don't go that way. Yeah, man. It's going to be bad.
I I don't mean to ruin the fun that we've had, but I'm completely against single digit jersey numbers on, you know, at the very least defensive players. But like, you know, so I'm against this radical change that we've been a part of for now 2 years. But like, that just made it worse. Like, you know what I mean? Like watching Melvin Ingram in this single digit, like it was just such a, in a like weird aqua futuristic Dolphins uniform. Like it was such a horrible look. I did not enjoy any moment of that whatsoever. Yeah, this is like, couldn't you totally see like Tyreek Hill having like 2 catches for like 19 yards and that just being like the only thing that anybody talks about the next week, like, oh, the Chiefs shut him down in his return to Arrowhead.
I feel like this game is going to go, this game might get a little bit into the grinder a little bit because again, despite it being the Chiefs, they have not looked the same this year. Of course, you're going to go up against a Dolphins team that is very different from the Dolphins team you faced in Germany. I think the Dolphins offense is probably going to lean a bit more on the run game because you don't want to go into a game trying to go shoot out with the Chiefs without having your offensive line healthy and potentially without having Mostert or Jaylen Waddle. Jaylen Waddle's absence is massive, or not massive, but you could feel it in the Bills game. You could feel they didn't have a second receiver they could trust. On the last interception to a throw, he was throwing to Chase Claypool, who ran the wrong route. Nothing good ever happens when you target Chase Claypool. So it's just going to be – this is going to be a really, really important week for Mike McDaniel game planning-wise. How does he attack this Chiefs defense who is going to throw a lot at Tua in terms of his eyes and what they show him post-snap?
We're both picking the Chiefs, to be clear.
Yeah.
And we reserve the right to change this because it's only Monday, but we're both picking the Chiefs. Okay, let's go to Sunday. The noon game, the Buffalo Bills as AFC East winners and the 2 seed. What a turn of events for the Buffalo Bills, obviously, will host the 7-seeded Pittsburgh Steelers, who squeaked in, obviously, because of everything that we mentioned. The Bills are 10-point favorites at home. This feels it feels like a pretty generous line, given the way that the Bills offense has kind of struggled at certain points. But, I mean, I'm not willing to take the Steelers. I don't know about you.
This game is going to go one of two ways. The Bills are going to blow them out or they're going to lose in the funniest game of all time. Like, that's just that's the only way this game ends. The Steelers are not good, but they have the capability of turning every game into a rock fight. And I do not want to face the Steelers defense in a rock fight. They're not going to have TJ Watt potentially because I think with the MCL sprain, I think they're saying that his hope is to be back for the divisional round, which that's a lot of future planning. But I don't know, man. Like the Bills should win, but it would not surprise me at all if this Bills team just completely like played the goofiest football of all time.
I don't know if you watched Josh Allen's post-game interview with Melissa Stark after the game. And it was actually really nice. Like, it was clear that, like, you know, the moment was kind of getting to him. And it was cool how he was like, I think we're playing the Steelers. And she was like, yeah, you are. Like, that was all, like, really cool and really authentic and genuine. And he had a comment that I thought was authentic and genuine. And said, because she was like, you know, talk about the end or whatever. And he was like, I wish it didn't always have to be that hard. And I was just thinking, like, it doesn't. like you're in direct control of this. Like you know, it doesn't always have to be stop playing chaotically. And it can just be smooth and simple. Like, you have the talent, but they just can't get out of their own way sometimes. But so we're taking the Bills.
I'm taking the Bills, but it's going to be very funny if you get Goofy Goober, Josh Allen, throwing picks across his body. That was the funniest play of last night. On the fourth down when they try to get it to Diggs, but Van Ginkle blocked him. So he's running to his right. He throws the ball and just gets completely like corkscrewed in midair and just throws up the funniest interception to Deshaun Elliott.
Sunday afternoon, the Dallas Cowboys, as the 2-seed NFC champions, will host those Green Bay Packers who we talked about. They are 7.5-point home favorites. They have not lost a game at home this season. I am a 10 out of 10 terrified. We got the NFL script writers did it, JP. They gave us Tyreek at Arrowhead. They gave us the game we're going to talk about in a moment, but they also gave us Mike McCarthy hosting the Green Bay Packers in a playoff game.
I have a lot of fear against a team with nothing to lose.
JP, what the hell, man? What the hell? I have been cool about the Jaguars. I've gotten, you know, the appropriate shots in, but I've been relatively cool. I could have been a lot meaner.
I'll go ahead, man. That team stinks. It's tough, you know. I think the Cowboys should win because they're going to be at home, and the Packers' defense is really bad.
Right.
And I think, again, they're one of the only teams that allowed the Carolina Panthers to score, like, double digits on. Like they,
I know. That I started them in my fantasy playoff matchup, and it costed me. Like, that's why I lost.
Yeah. Like, the Joe Barry defense is one that, well, defense is a suggestion and not a requirement. I just guess I'm a little worried for the Cowboys defensively because, again, this Packers offense has nothing to lose. Matt LaFleur is going to come in with a really good game plan. And I just wonder how the Packers are going to get the linebackers for Dallas involved in their passing game. They use a lot of play action. They run a lot of deep crossers off of play action. I think that's going to be a big thing that they hammer against the Cowboys to try and kind of isolate those linebackers. I'm going to pick Dallas, but again, a team with nothing to lose. We've seen Packers teams with nothing to lose go to the Cowboys and come out with a win.
I mean, I am terrified because of the Cowboys. Like, just I'd be terrified no matter what. But this is big. I mean, and this is what they went through, everything they did, you know, to get to the chance to win this game and host a division around playoff game. The round I can't get over. They haven't hosted a division around playoff game since 2016, when it was against the Packers and Mike McCarthy was on the other sideline. So for the right to host another one, they have to go through the Packers with Mike McCarthy at the helm. I'm confident, obviously, but you're right. Like, the Packers defense is just, I mean, it's not trustworthy right now. And Dak is just playing out of his mind. I mean, like, so if, I mean, I feel very confident trusting the Cowboys. I'm just scared because it's a scary thing. That's all. So that's where I'm at.
If the game turns into a shootout, I'm taking the Cowboys because I just think Dak and CD are playing at such a high level and the Packers defense can't stop anybody.
If there's going to be a shootout, it's going to be the game after this. On Sunday Night Football next week, the Los Angeles Rams are visiting the Detroit Lions. The over-under for this is the highest of all six playoff games in the wild card, around 51.5. The Lions are only 3-point home favorites, just straight up home field advantage. Vegas believes that on a neutral field, they are equal teams. It's obviously Matthew Stafford's return to Detroit. And I'm guilty of this. I checked out Pride of Detroit on Sunday night. The idea of it being Jared Goff's, you know, revenge completely, like, washed over me. Like, I was so focused on the Stafford part of this. So, like, the Goff, you know, element and aspect was, like, completely nowhere in my brain. I don't know if it was for you.
I think the Goff revenge thing is kind of one-sided. I don't think the Rams think or care about Jared Goff at all. He won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Rams are like, okay, be pissed. Cool. It worked out. Yeah.
It's like that meme where it's like, I don't think about you at all. Or like, I don't think the Rams care. Like, this is a revenge game for Jared Goff. Okay, man. Like, revenge for what? But I would be very concerned if I was a Detroit fan because the passing game, the pass defense especially, has not looked good. The Rams have just carved teams with motion and leverage. And against a team that plays a lot of man defense, I'm a little concerned because you're going to have the corners to stay with Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. And that's going to be a problem. On the other side of the ball, I think the Rams have kind of a bend don't break defense. They get a lot of big plays. You know, Byron Young has 8 sacks, but doesn't really have like the win rate. He kind of is the cleanup guy. Aaron Donald is still Aaron Donald. That is you're going to have to block him with 4 out of the 5 offensive linemen. You can leave the other 3 defensive linemen to kind of chill. But I think this is going to be a Ben Johnson, like, he has to call one of his best games because he's going to get the chance to get the edges of the Rams defense in isolation. So it's going to be a shootout. But, man, it's tough to pick against a Rams team that's playing with a lot of confidence right now.
Kind of like the Bills-Steelers game, I think this game goes one of two ways. It's either the Lions offense scores on literally every possession, like, just, you know, touchdown, 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 field goal, touchdown, like, just over and over and over again, and maybe LA is kind of going shot for shot with them, or Aaron Donald has, like, some crazy strip sack fumble that gets returned for a touchdown that puts the Lions in, like, a 14-0 hole early on, and then they're just chasing things all night long and get away from who they want to be. So, it'll be – this is – I mean, obviously, I'm looking forward to the Cowboys game, but this is the game I think everyone's looking the most forward to. I think it makes sense to be on Sunday night. The final game of the wild card round, JP, the Philadelphia Eagles, who lost the NFC East in basically every game since they beat the Buffalo Bills, will be visiting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Bucs played in this Monday night slot a year ago. They hosted the Cowboys. This sucks, by the way. Like, so there's a world where the Rams beat the Lions, obviously. And if the Cowboys beat the Packers, then the Cowboys get a rest advantage over a team for a divisional round playoff game. Like, that's so stupid that we do this. Like, NFL, nobody wants this. But nevertheless, the Bucs are 2.5-point home underdogs, JP.
So the Eagles and the Bucs played in week 3 this year.
Right.
These are two completely different teams. Like, it just feels, the vibes are so different on both sides. For the Eagles, I would say F around if you want to, because I would not play around with this Bucs team. I'm not saying it like the Bucs are a fantastic team. Of course, going 9-8 in the NFC South, somebody had to win. But with the way that Baker Mayfield has shown that he can play against defenses that don't have that major issues up the spine, like linebacker and safety, like, they're going to isolate Chris Godwin against Nick Morrow for most of the game. And I know who I'm going to take in that case. The health of A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith is huge, and Jalen Hurts, because if they can't throw the ball to A.J. Brown, the offense just looks so static and lethargic. I wonder if the Eagles try and ball control it and try and just hammer away at the Bucs defense to try and, like, turn this into a real, like, Army-Navy game. But I would not play around with Baker Mayfield. I'm not saying, like, Baker Mayfield, again, is, like, fantastic, but he has shown he is capable of absolutely, like, lighting up bad defenses. Dave Canales has done a great job of coordinating this offense and getting Baker Mayfield to throw the ball to his two best players. I don't know.
We didn't pick the Rams Lions game, by the way. So we need your picks for those. Rams Lions and Eagles Bucks. Go.
As of today, I'm gonna say the Rams. And
I'm gonna take the Eagles before you have a chance to do that. I'm gonna give them one last benefit of the doubt. I mean, although I feel very not confident in it, obviously.
I'm also going to give them the benefit of the doubt, but F around if you want to, because you'll find out real quick.
That concludes a massive show, obviously. Our portion, the most important portion, is yet to come. Rachel, if you could please join us and let us know your takeaways from all of week 18, how it feels to have JP constantly hate on your Ravens, what it was like experiencing the Eagles loss. I saw you did, what did you call it? Like, it wasn't like a therapy show, but like a vent session or whatever. Yeah.
We did the PG&E Insurrection show in the third quarter instead of waiting until the game was over.
So if you could let us know your thoughts on that. And of course, if you could hand out the MF double MVP, please.
Yeah. I already told JP before the game, like before, not the game, before the show started today, that I was rooting for the Jags because you guys know I'm a Ravens fan. I live in a household where it's divided. So half of my household are Steelers fans. And so I was hurting a lot these last, 18 hours. One, when they lost, but of course it was to the backups. And then when the Jags lost and now the Steelers are in the playoffs, like, I have not been hearing enough of that for, the last night and this morning. So I was rooting for the Jags, and it just sucks that they, let us down. but the injury you guys did, I don't know if you guys touched on, but for the Steelers, TJ Watt could be missing some time. And so that's just something to be worth monitoring. One of their best players possibly being out for the first round of the playoffs. And so I don't know. It's going to be interesting to monitor. Also, you guys already mentioned the Lions, rookie tight end, Sam Laporta, could be missing some time. He's been a bright spot for them. And so worth monitoring for the first round of the playoffs. And then for the Eagles, I mean, the biggest takeaway was just like, in addition to them just collapsing in this, you know, down the last stretch, what, five of the last six games looking terrible, but like all the injuries, you guys already mentioned it. They could be really, really thin when it comes to like safety, because Sidney Brown also suffered an injury. Also, they think it might be a torn ACL. I think it's going to come out today at some point. And so just on top of all of the AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith didn't play, DeAndre Swift didn't play. They're just various. Cam Jurgens, I think, got hurt. So it was just like so many injuries piling up at the MetLife field. Their turf sucks. And another thing I did see Diana Russini tweet out is a potential landing spot for Bill Belichick could be the Falcons. So yeah. Yeah. But yeah, those are my biggest like takeaways at this point. And I'm going to give it to, I think, RJ. I think you did a good job today.
Yes. Well, JP won the first one of 2024. So now we're even.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned. JP, it was a great match. Mark wasn't here, so there's only one loser, and unfortunately it's you. But you're not a loser. You're a winner. You're perfect in every single way. And yeah, football's fun. Establish it and keep it established forever. JP, who wins tonight and why?
I'm picking the Washington Huskies tonight to win the national championship. I think having an NFL quarterback and three NFL receivers is going to be a problem against most college defenses. I think they will ultimately find a way to score points. If they can get to 30 or more, I struggle to think Michigan can score with them.
Okay. Everybody have a good week. It's the playoffs.